ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ। So we started chapter 8, and chapter 8 started with a question by Arjun which was triggered because of these new terms that Bhagwan used in the last two verses in chapter 7. And the terms were Brahma, Adhyatma, Adhibhutam, Adhidaivam, Adhiyajnam, Adhiyajnaha. These were the terms that were used, and naturally Arjun had not heard those before. So the first two verses of the 8th chapter, they're straightforward questions by Arjun. What is Brahma? What is Adhyatma? What is Karma? Adhibhutam, what is Adhibhutam? And then what is Adhidaivam, Adhiyajnam? But after that, he added one more question, a seventh question. Prayana kale cha katham neyosi nyatatmavi. How does one with a controlled mind know you at the time of departure? Prayana kale prakarshena yana. Prakarshena means final departure, so death. Bhagwan starts off his answer with Brahma, because that was the first same order he has answered. Aksharam Brahma Paramam. So it is imperishable and it is the supreme. It is the supreme support of everything. That is how this word Brahma should be understood. Adhyatma, he says, is Swabhava. Swabhava means that supreme reality, which is Brahma, which was described as Brahma, that supreme reality expressing through individual bodies is what is Adhyatma, which means it is the I notion, which means it is the ego, which means in common language what we call Jiva Bhava or Jivatma or Jiva. So it is an expression of the supreme reality. Technically, it is a reflection of the supreme reality happening in the medium of the mind, of the subtle body. So that is what Adhyatma is. And then he said, karma is that giving up because of which the human beings will spiritually evolve. So what is to be given up so that we can spiritually evolve is not the karma itself, but the doership and the enjoyership which accompanies every action that we do, because that is the only way we can spiritually evolve. And that's why he says, Bhuta Bhava Udbhava Karaha Visarga. Udbhava, that which will raise us up, that giving has to be done. Giving up has to be done. And so the giving up is not of action physically. Physical action is not asked to be given up, just the notion of doership and this thing. Then what is Adhibhutam? So Adhibhutam Kshara Bhavaha. So that which is Kshara, which is perishing. So Adhibhutam is all that falls under Idam. So Idam, we understand very well, is this entire world. Okay. But we also have to understand that the Aham that right now I think, Aham, that also is Idam, because that is ego. The one that is thinking that I am speaking, I am doing, I will enjoy, that is what we think is Aham, but that is not the real Aham. Real Aham is this Aksharam Brahma. So we must understand that, which means that in simple language, it means that this body also, body, mind and intellect also should be understood as Idam. And therefore that is perishable, and therefore that is Adhibhutam, and that is not the real thing. That is where we have a problem. To understand that everything beyond my body is Idam, it's very easy to understand. But when it comes to the body itself, body, mind and intellect, then we have problems saying, oh, that is also Idam. Yes, that is also Idam, because they can be seen. The body is seen, so it becomes false. Whatever is seen is false, is inert. And so mind is seen, and so is the intellect. So that's why that is Adhibhutam. And then Purusha, he says, is Adhidaivatam. Purusha here must not be understood as the Supreme Purusha, as Brahma. But I told you it is Hiranyagarbha. So Ishvara, which is the total causal body, has the total mind, which is known as Hiranyagarbha. And from this Hiranyagarbha, all the material that goes into the creation of all the Brahmandas comes. And what is the material? The five great elements. So from, there is only one Ishvara, one Hiranyagarbha, one Virat, but then there are many, many Brahmandas. Like I told you last time, in even in the scientific world, they say there are many, many solar systems. They say there are thousands of suns. Okay, so if the scriptures are saying it, why can't we believe it? Now, every Brahmanda, I told you, has its own set of Brahma, Vishnu and Mahesh, the creator, the sustainer and the destroyer. The material, because there is only one Hiranyagarbha, the material for the entire creation is coming from that Hiranyagarbha, which here is being referred to as Adhidaiva. And the creator, Brahmaji, uses the same material and creates the different jivas, not according to his will, but according to the karmas that the jivas have done in the past. Like there is a lump of clay which can be converted into a mouse, as well as Ganesh Ji's idol, as well as the modak that sits on his hand, as well as the ornaments and the clothes also are made out of clay. So same way, this same material, the five elements are used. They themselves are neither sattvic, rajasic or tamasic, but they can be fashioned into sattvic mind, sattvic body, you know, rajasic body, rajasic mind, tamasic mind. So they can be fashioned into that way, but they themselves are free of this sattva rajas, and they have that sattva rajas tamas, but they are not influenced by it. So Adhidaiva is Purusha. So this word Purusha must be understood as Hiranyagarbha in this verse number 4. Adi Yajna, he says, is my expression through the individual body. So now here, not his expression, but that individual consciousness that we talk about. So we talk about individual consciousness, which I think is within my body, which is also known as Kutastha in technical terms, and as opposed to the total consciousness. But just like space in the pot, which is called pot space, is no different than the total space which is around the pot, so also this individual consciousness is not different than the total consciousness. We think it's different. I think that, oh, there is one consciousness within me and one consciousness within somebody else. It is the same consciousness. It is the same space which is in a golden pot and a clay pot. The pot itself is in space. So the body itself is in consciousness, actually. Our body itself is in consciousness. And we think that. So that is an imagined upadhi. The body is an imagined upadhi. It is mithya. Just like the pot is mithya. Because the pot can break and the pot space will then merge into the total space. So this is how these six terms have to be understood. And then I told you that then the last question, the entire chapter then is dedicated to the last question. So we go further to verse 5, because from here, the last question of Arjun, which is line 2 of verse 2, is now being answered.
Antakale cha mameva smaran muktva kalevaram yaprayati samadbhavam yati nastyatra saushayaha.
And whosoever leaving the body goes forth remembering me alone at the time of his death, he attains my being. There is no doubt about this. So antakale here is very similar, synonymous with prayanakale in verse 2. Anta is end. So at the time of the end. Now this end is the final end, the departure, because this antakale word can be interpreted in various ways. If you look at it from the point of view of Mandukya Upanishad, then Mandukya Upanishad says there is no death only. There's no birth and there's no death. So antakale. The other antakala also is for the realized master. So even while living, when he realizes, it is said that there is death. His previous life is now dead and now he's living as a master. You know, so antakale is there also. There is this antakale can be interpreted. But in this verse, we must take it only as death of the body. So this is the final death of the body. But this is the death of a person, because the question is, of niyata atmabhi, so of a controlled mind. So this antakale is referring to the death of a person who has lived his life with very much control, with self-control. Okay, so because the question is referring, Arjuna has not asked for everybody what happens to everybody at the time of death. He says, how does one remembering you? One who has led a controlled life, how does he remember you? So this antakale, which is physical death of the body, Bhagavan is saying here that antakale cha mama eva smaran. Mama eva smaran means the one at the very end who remembers me alone. Uktva kalevaram means, and he gives up his body. Kalevaram is body. So while giving up his body, when he remembers me alone, then he comes to my bhava. He comes to me, and you do not have any doubt about this. So there are a few things here. One thing is this smaran. Smaran means memory. Okay. So it is said that at the end, and there are people who asked Gurudev, is that, okay, now Bhagwan has promised that at the time of my death, if I remember him, I'll go to him. Then the question arises, why should I remember him now? If at that time, then I will remember him at the end, then I will go to him. So there is this story. We'll start with the story. So it's this one person who was a businessman, who was a shopkeeper, had heard this verse. And he thought, okay, fine then, you know, that's no problem. At that time of my death, I will remember the Lord. And he made doubly sure by naming he had four boys. So he named all four of them the Lord's names, you know, Keshav, Madhav, Narayan, like that. Because he said, you know, at the time of my death, of course I'm going to call my children. Anyone I call, it's the name of the Lord. I've fulfilled this verse 5. I will go to the Lord. Okay, fine. Then all his life, he got busy with his business, with his shop, and his sons also grew up, and then he became old. And one day he went into a coma and he was in the hospital. So the sons thought, oh my God, you know, when he comes out, as in when he comes out, we don't know who he will call first. So we should all four be there. Because, you know, he might call any one of us. So we should not delay going to him. So all four of them were sitting by his bedside. And then one day he came out of the coma by some miracle. And when he looked at the sons, the first question he said was, who is at the shop? If all four of you are sitting here and I am lying in bed, who? Point is that whatever that you have done throughout your life, that only you will remember. You cannot remember something at the last minute which you have not done throughout your life. His whole attention was on the shop. So at the last minute, when he saw his son, he said, who is at the shop? So this memory, when Bhagwan says that whoever remembers me, memory presupposes knowledge. See, I cannot have memory of something that I don't know at all. I have not been to some country, you know, and how can I suddenly have memory? If I think about it, it is imagination. I can imagine that this country may be like this, and they say it is beautiful, and it is, there is this and that and all that. But that is imagination. Memory can only come from knowledge. And therefore, another word for memory is recollection. Recollection. So first the collection has to be done. First the knowledge has to be gained, and then you can recollect it. You can remember it. And so the first principle of memory is you have to have knowledge. Now, as per that knowledge, you will remember, right? If you have correct knowledge, you will have correct memory. If you have incorrect knowledge, you will remember incorrectly. Suppose you don't, you know, if you think that somebody's address is this and that was wrong in the first place, then when it comes to your memory, you'll enter the wrong address only, right? So the point here is that if this person has to remember Bhagwan at the end, he has to have knowledge of Bhagwan. Okay, that is number one criteria. Second one is that knowledge has to be correct. Knowledge, so how is the knowledge, how should that knowledge be? Like he has told in the previous two verses, he must understand Brahma, or he must understand the Lord to be Aksharam Paramam, so formless, that way. And then what the jiva is, what sort of karma is to be done. So he has to do to even understand God in the correct way. He has to do all that karma yoga and everything, purify his mind, have a correct knowledge. When he has correct knowledge, that is what he will remember. Now, another thing about this remembrance is, okay, let's take the best of circumstances, because there can be worse circumstances, but let's take that person has lived his life, he has grown old, and his death is in a ripe old age. Okay, very ideal conditions that he has seen everything in life. But the thing is, what we must also remember, and I mean, it's our experience. See, if there is something that I have not done throughout my life, does it become easy for me to do in my old age, or is it going to be even more difficult to do? Like, suppose if I didn't drive all my life, I don't know driving, and I'm not. Now, suddenly at the age of 60 or 70, if somebody's telling me, now you learn driving, do you think I'll be comfortable doing that? Unless I have put effort into something in my young age, when I had the strength, that thing I cannot do effortlessly in my old age. Anything, maybe cooking, maybe driving, maybe exercising, maybe lifting weights. If I have not done it all my life, suddenly in my old age, I cannot. First, I have to put the effort. Then it will become effortless. And in old age, it is difficult for us to put effort. Body is weak, mind is weak, memory weakens, right? So anything that I may have done very easily in my young age, if I'm trying to do it now, it's probably taking me more time. It is not as effortless as it was. I forget, oh, did I put salt? Not. Did I do this kind of thing. So if this person has not thought of the Lord at all, or one thing is, if he has not thought, he will never have the memory. Okay, if he has thought, but he has not put in enough effort, anything that is done in old age has to be effortless. Because you know why? Our strength is no longer there. So whatever that I'm an expert at, only I will be able to do when I'm old, because of lack of strength. So when he says that, suppose if this person is gotten to old age, then whatever he does, he must have done it before. That's a prerequisite, that he must have put in effort before, then it will become effortless, then effortlessly he will think of the Lord at all times. This is an ideal situation. But the other thing about death is, we don't even know when death will come and how it will come, right? So there is really, he says at the time, but how do I mean, people die suddenly. People die in accidents. People go into coma and die. So if we have this thought that while at the time of death, but I don't know when that death is going to come and how it is going to come, I don't know. So that's why it is recommended in our scriptures, is that day and night you take the names, Lord, because you really don't know what is going to happen when. That is why that requirement is being given. That in the morning when you get up, you take the name of the Lord. Before going to bed, you take the name of the Lord. Because in the middle of the night, you could pass. You could pass in the middle of the day. So to be on the safe side, this is to be on the... Because it's lucky. Person lives to old age, it's lucky. But can we say that all of us can be that lucky? Right? So therefore, when Bhagwan says at the time of giving up the body, but do I know the time? If everybody knew this, is then okay, then 8 days before that I can start. It's like not exam. Exam is fixed. There is exam in whatever month, then 1 month before I start studying. It's not like that. We don't know. We don't know what will happen, right? So therefore, this, it seems like a very simple verse that, we don't know when it will come. We don't know how it will come, whether I will go in coma. Then even if I don't go in coma, even if it's not sudden, I've lived old and all, if it has not become effortless by that time, I will not be able to do it. And if my mind has been in something else all my life, that something else only will come in my mind. The Bhagwan cannot come in our mind. Okay? So that's why he says that at the end, remember me only. Ya prayati samadbhavam yati nastyatra saushay. There is no doubt. See, doubt means if there is any kind of doubt in our, there is, you know, we do sankalpa, right? Sankalpa means we decide that, okay, I will fast, I will do X number of fasts, or I will do this sort of walk every day or run every day, this kind of thing. In that, there is two types of sankalpa, siddha sankalpa and asiddha sankalpa. And what is the siddha means? That which will be fulfilled. See, when you make a sankalpa, when you make a decision, you must not have any doubt that you will be able to fulfill it. If that doubt comes, but you know, will I be able to get up early morning and go for a walk or this and that? Then it will never get fulfilled. So that's why this, don't have doubt, he says. Because what Bhagwan is saying, if you have doubt in what I'm saying, I'm telling you that now you have doubt. Who knows? Bhagwan just said, then it will not happen. Even if you remember, it will not happen. And the other point about this also is that how you remember the Lord, that bhava, that's why he says, ya pravati sa mad bhavam, that bhava, that abode, you will reach. So if you remember him as the formless, pure consciousness, supreme reality, you will merge with him permanently. But if you remember him as the cowherd boy, if you remember Krishna, and when Krishna, the word is uttered, you suddenly, this cowherd boy is coming, and you will reach that cowherd boy's person, place. If you say Rama, see, when you say Rama or Krishna or Devi or whatever, what should come to our mind is that substratum for that final departure, the realization for which there's no, otherwise you will, if you think Rama or Vaikunth Loka, then you will go to Vaikunth Loka. So that's why this correct knowledge, for this correct memory, to have this memory, that becomes important. And therefore the knowledge has to be as per the previous verses. That this is Aksharam Paramam Brahma, and even though I say Krishna or I say Rama or I say Devi or whoever that I say, they are all one and the same. If I have Krishna is superior than Rama and now I'm remembering Krishna, then you're not going to reach the abode. Madbhavam, that is not the correct knowledge that this person has. So that also becomes a factor in this. Okay. Now the question is, on what basis, Bhagwan, are you saying this? What is the proof that you're saying? Bhagwan is saying, don't have any doubt, but still we can have a doubt, like where you just brought it out of your hat. Therefore, now in next one, Bhagwan gives the principle behind that, what he has said in the verse 5.
Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajatyante kalevaram tam 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 eveti kaunteya sadatad bhava bhavitaha.
Whosoever at the end leaves the body thinking of any being, to that being only he goes, O Kaunteya, O son of Kunti, because of his constant thought of that being. So the principle behind what he said in the earlier verse, he says, if they think of me, they come to me. Bhagwan is saying, it is not just applicable to me. Whatever that they think, they will go. There is the story of Jada Bharat in Bhagavad Purana. So Jada Bharat in his previous life was a very pious sage. He was a rishi. And he was very close to self-realization, very, very close. He was very meditative. He was a sannyasi. He was living in the forest. And what happens one day is he goes to the river to take a bath. And there he sees this deer, one deer, pregnant deer, drinking. She had come to drink water also at the same time. But what happens is at that very moment, this lion comes and he roars. So when he roars that loudly, the mother, the deer, she, because of that fright, she just gives birth to that baby and she dies. So the deer is born, the baby deer is born, and the mother dies because of that fright, because that loud, lion's roar. Now, this Rishi is watching this whole thing, right? He sees that deer being born, and he knows that if he leaves that baby there, then that lion is going to come and eat it away, right? So he picks up the baby and he brings it to the ashram. Now what happens is, because it's a little cute deer, it is, then he has to look for her food, that deer's food. Then he started feeding her. Then she started sitting, he or she, I don't know, that deer started sitting in his lap. Then when he's meditating, that deer is sitting in the lap. Then he's making sure that the deer sleeps. So all his thoughts, instead of meditation, where is she? Where is that deer? If I close my eyes, then if she leaves the ashram, then some lion might kill her. Some tiger might eat her. So all his thoughts were on that deer. And then what happened was, a time of death came for him. The time of death. And at the time of death, the last thought that he had was, who will look after this deer when I am gone? See, he was a highly evolved rishi. Understand, this is from Bhagavat, okay? And he should have known for sure that whoever is looking after anybody in this universe is the Lord. Right? In spite of that much tapasya, at the last moment, if he had that thought, imagine where we will be. Whatever we can be, when he has already done so much tapas in the forest, in the ashram, that love for that attachment to that deer made him think of this. So because that was that last thought, he got born as a deer. Because the last thought was of deer. Now, what happened though, as a deer also, because the jiva is the same, that jiva, because of all his previous penance, his tapa, his meditation, his remembrance of the Lord, that jiva remembered in that deer's body what had happened in the past life. He realized, that jiva realized, that all this calamity has come because of my attachment to the deer. And now I became a deer, because that's what I thought of at the last minute. Though all his life he may not have thought of the deer, but at the last minute he did. So he became a deer. So he knew that now he had to exhaust this life. So then what happened was, then he died, the deer died, and he took birth as a human being, and his name was Bharat. He again remembered what had happened in the previous births. He remembered that I was a rishi, I was highly evolved, then I got attached, then I died, then I had this thought, then I became a deer. So now in this life, he decided, I am not going to get attached to anything, because that was my downfall. So then what he started doing was, as he grew old, he became young. He was not working. He had older brothers. They got married. The sisters-in-law would tell him work. He will purposely go and do opposite. Purposely. Because he said, if I do correct work, then they will get attached to me, then I will get attached to them. No. So every time they would tell him something, he will do something opposite and come. Finally, they got so fed up. They said, you're only sitting here and eating whole day. Because he was meditating. But they thought he's doing nothing. He's just eating and wasting time and just sitting, right? So ultimately, one day what they said was, you get out of the house. And he wanted that. He wanted that, because he didn't want to get attached to anything. He knew that because of this attachment, this whole calamity had happened. So they threw him out of the house. They said, no, you're just eating our food and you're not doing anything correct. And, that's it. You have no place in this house. And he was very happy. So he went off and he used to just sit under a tree and meditate. And, that's all. He did not talk to anybody. He did not want to get attached to anybody. He did not want to do anything. If my prarabdha food is to come for this body, it will come. I don't have to go running after food. So that sort of life he was leading. Except one day what happened was, the king was coming in a palanquin. And that king was going to an ashram to get spiritual knowledge. He was going to some rishi's ashram to get spiritual knowledge. But just as the palanquin was coming, four people carrying it, one person, he wasn't feeling well. Now, without the fourth person, they cannot carry this king in the palki. And this Bharat, Jad Bharat, So they used to call him Jada Bharat. Jada means inert, like, you know, totally like a stone, living like a stone. So he was sitting under the tree. So they said, would you like to help us carry the palanquin? Because the king has to go to this particular ashram. He said, okay, fine. What is there? So he was one of the people, one of the four people carrying the palki for the king, the palanquin. But what he was doing was, anytime he saw an insect, he didn't want to step on the insect, so he would jump over it. Because there are, you know, things crawling on the ground, right? So every time he saw, then he was jumping like this. And the king was getting irritated because, you know, one person is jumping in the palanquin. So the king finally got really irritated. He said, put the thing down. He got out and he said, what are you doing? Do you even realize what you're doing? You're jumping, constantly jumping. You can't walk. Can't you walk straight? Because you're jumping and then I am flipping up and down up there in there. So he said, what? One lump of mud is carrying another lump of mud. That is what he said. So when he said, the king also was this thing. King suddenly realized what he's talking. He said, "Arey, why am I going to that ashram? You are a realized master. I want to take lessons from you only." Because what he was saying was, this body, which is nothing but a lump of mud, is carrying you. You're also what? Nothing. Lump of mud. And what are you talking? Uncomfortable. So that he understood, and then he became his disciple and he studied right there. He sat there. So Jada Bharat. So this is the story of Jada Bharat. Okay. This is the principle. That is what Bhagwan is saying here. That yam yam vapi smaran bhavam. Yam yam, whoever, whatever they remember, that they will become. That is the principle. So according to that principle, if they remember me, then they have to come to me. But to come to me, they must have correct knowledge. To have memory, I told you have to have correct knowledge. And the correct knowledge is this Aksharam Brahma Parama. That is only the correct knowledge. Any other name of the Lord, form of the Lord, all these are illusions. Form is false. So if you think of the Lord and if you think as... The problem is, see, if I think of myself as the body, I will always think of Lord as the body. That's why Raman Maharshi in Saddarshanam, he has said, people ask, does God have a form or is he formless? Then Raman Maharshi asked, what do you think you have? Do you have a form or you don't have a form? And if they, of course I have a form. Okay, then God has a form. Because when you think of yourself as form, you can never imagine anything formless. You can't. So then what happens is that knowledge first has to filter into us knowing that we are not the body. See how this is going deeper and deeper. It feels very simple. At the last minute, you remember me, you'll come to me. But all these factors are included in that. If I continue to consider myself as the body, I will never be able to think of the Lord as formless, as the substratum. I will think of it form. If I think of the Lord as form, I will go to his form, to his abode. But I don't get that final self-realization. I can't. And the principle, this is what the principle. So whatever you think of while leaving this body, and that's why I told you, leaving the body also is not in our hands. We don't know what is going to happen. Tam tam eve tam tam tameve iti kauteya. So that is what will happen, Kauteya. Sada tad bhava bhavita. Now this tad bhava bhavita, what it means is what Bhagwan is trying to say here, that they come to me only and they attain to my bhava. That is what it means. Tad bhava bhava. Whatever bhava that they are having. Here bhava means thought. So whatever thought that they have, they will go to that thought. Like that. That is what literally tad bhava, that bhava. So that thought of what they have, they will reach bhavitaha. They will reach that thought. All right. This is how. So what it actually means is, suppose now the question is pertaining to a person who has lived his life with a controlled mind, self-controlled. So what we presume is that this person has actually at least try to understand the Lord in the correct way. Okay, because controlled mind, senses controlled means he is engaging his mind and senses in the thought of the Lord. That is how we presume it. Because otherwise, senses controlled, then what will he do with the controlled senses? Either the senses are going out into the world and uncontrolled, but if you control them from the world, then there remains only one thing to meditate on, which is the pure consciousness, which is aham. When your mind is not on idam, it has to be, there are only two things in this world. There is aham, which is the pure consciousness, and then there is idam, this entire world, including body mind. So when the mind is withdrawn from idam, it has to be fixed in aham. Otherwise, where else will it go? There is nowhere else for the mind to go. So what Bhagwan, what it means here, tad bhavavita. So when this person has done this constantly, withdrawn his mind from the idam, withdrawn his mind from the world, objects of the world, and fixed it in me, then when he gets old, then what I do is, if he can't remember me in his old age, I will remember him. This is what it means. So that is what Bhagwan is promising. Like you, when you have the strength, when you have the capacity, if you try to withdraw your, try, at least try. We are not saying you can withdraw, but at least if you try all your life, put in effort to withdraw that mind from this entire world of objects, emotions, and thoughts. And then that controlled mind, because it will gain a lot of energy. Mind, when controlled, has got a lot of energy. So that mind, where will it go? So if you're then trying to put it in me, if you're trying to remember me, if you're trying to meditate on me, then in your old age, when you may not be able to do it effortlessly, I will then step in and I will remember you and you will come to me. So this is what he's saying. This is, so that is what question he had asked. Okay. So this is what this is the principle. And first is the statement made and the principle. And then he goes on to say, Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanusmara yudhyacha mayar pitamano buddhihi mame vaishyasya saushayaha. Therefore, at all times, remember me and fight. With mind and intellect fixed or absorbed in me, you shall doubtless come to me alone. When we start a statement with therefore, we immediately know that it is a continuation from before. I cannot say, therefore, I took the umbrella. It was raining, therefore, I took the umbrella. So when there are other verses also that start with tasmat. So this word tasmat indicates that it's concluding the first two. So first two means the previous six and five. So in five, he said, whoever remembers me will come to me. How do you say that, Bhagwan? Because that is the principle. Whatever he remembers, it's not just me. Whatever he remembers, a deer, he'll become a deer. He remembers a tiger, he'll become a tiger. So whatever he remembers, he will do. And therefore, because that principle is there, he says, sarveshu kaleshu, because you don't know when death will come. Why sarveshu kaleshu? Because he said at the end he can remember me. Then now why are you saying sarveshu kaleshu? Because you don't know when death is going to come. And if you do not do this sarveshu kaleshu means at all times, if you do not do it, at the end there's no chance that you're going to remember. So sarveshu kaleshu indicates that spirituality is a full-time job. It is not part-time job. So therefore, we need to bring this in. Now, you might say, but I already have a full-time job, so I can't have two full-time jobs, you know? No, you have to bring spirituality in the work. And how do you bring that spirituality in the work? Is by converting work into karma yoga. When you convert that work, when you work, you have to work, you will get your pay. But just don't do it only for pay. Don't say 5 minutes, half an hour, one day you have to, oh yeah, am I going to get paid if I work late? Don't say things like that. Do it for the joy of it. That is the only way you can bring spirituality in entire. Do every action as a duty. Do every action without grudging it. Ah, do I have to do this? Happily, joyfully. And while doing, how do I bring mam anusmara yuddha cha? So anus, mam, me, Anu means, Anu, smara is memory, but Anu means following. Anu is the prefix means afterwards, like following. So the question arises, Anusmara means remember me afterwards means what? Means I do all the work and then I say, okay, Bhagwan, now I remember you. No. Anusmara means, Anu is indicating first you understand me as per the scriptures. Because I told you, memory, if I have to have, I have to have knowledge. If I have to have correct memory, I have to have correct knowledge. And therefore he says Anusmara means first you study the scriptures. First you read what exactly I am. First you understand those two verses that I told you, Aksharam Brahma Parama. And then you remember me like that. And you remember me at all times. So know that he is the indweller. So he's watching all our thoughts. If we even have this thing in mind that he's watching all our actions, he's watching all our thoughts, will we have a bad thought, a cruel thought? Will we dare to have, oh, let something bad happen to my neighbor kind of thought? That is what is meant by Ma Manusmara. Know that I am the substratum. Know that I am within you. Know that I am watching your every thought, your every action, your every movement, and then correct your thought, correct your movement, correct your actions. Knowing Anusmara, Anu, first know that I am there. Most of the people don't even know this, that he's within us, right? They think he's in the temple. So who is watching? Nobody's watching. That is what is meant by Mam Anuswara Yudhyacha. Now this Yudhya word, Yudha war. War, specifically for Arjun, it is war. Because now we can say, but I am not in any war. I am not in the army. So the war here is for us, our own actions, our own life. Okay, for Arjun, yes, it was war because war was impending. They were standing on the battlefield. Now this Yudhyacha also, actions to be done for other people. This is how this is to be interpreted, and I'll tell you why. So in Sanskrit, for those of you who know Sanskrit grammar, there are verbs of two kinds. The verb can, I think the word is decline. There is one which is known as the Atmanipadi verb, Atmanipadi, and Parasmaipadi. Okay, now Atmanipadi verb, Atma. Atma means me, self, right? So Atmanipadi verb, when it is formed in that way, it would mean for myself. That would mean, because Atmanipadi. So it would mean that it's for me. But when it is formed in a way which falls under Parasmaipadi, Parasmai is somebody else. Then that verb is action, right? Verb indicates action. So this verb can be for myself, because you see, there is action can be done either for myself or for somebody else. It's an action. Cooking, simple example. I can cook dinner only for myself, or I can also cook for somebody else. So in Sanskrit, because it's such a refined language, so when the verb is put in a certain way, it means I'm cooking only for myself. And when it is put in another way, it means I'm doing it for somebody else. So this Yudhya word is a Parasmaipadi verb. This is here, Yudhya or Yudhyasva. So if it was used as Yudhate, I believe, then it would become Atmanipadi. Means you do war for yourself there, or for us, you do keep doing actions for your own self. But that is not what is used here. This same explanation Bhagwan Shankaracharya has given in Ishavasya Upanishad. There also this karma word is there. And the translation which Gurudev has given is you do actions for other's sake. And then the question arises, how do you know that this? So that is from Bhagwan Shankaracharya's interpretation. Because that verb is declined in such a way that it becomes a Parasmaipadi. So when it becomes Parasmaipadi, same way this Yudhya cha is and, so that is not part of the verb. This Yudhya is a Parasmaipadi verb, and which means you do for Arjun war. That's why he's saying you do war for Dharma, for other people whom he has, because that's what Bhagwan always was trying to tell him, that is, this war is not because Draupadi got derobed, excuse me, and I am not here because she got derobed. That's not my reason to be here. You are fighting for the entire people, not your wife alone. So that's why it is said you remember me and you fight the war. For us, it is you remember me and you do all your actions in your life and do them for others' sake. So then do it as a duty. Then it automatically is becoming karma yoga. So automatically that understanding is coming. So when we do something, see, whatever we say is like a gauge of what I understand. Henna, like what I understand, then that way I will do, no? So if I'm doing work, following those principles of karma yoga, like doing it as a duty, doing it without attachment, doing it with prasad buddhi, samatva buddhi, etc., it indicates to another master or to me myself, it indicates to me that I know those things, and then I will do it that way, right? If I didn't know the principles of karma yoga before I came into the mission, I didn't know myself. I'm talking about myself. I didn't know all this duty and this only this, that. But now that I have come to know, then I can bring those principles in my life. Actually, in my own, whether other people recognize it or not is not the problem. It's my own, it's self-analysis. It should be just my problem. I want to evolve. So therefore, what he's saying is, anusmara, mam anusmara means first you understand who exactly I am. I'm not this form. I am that formless substratum. Then remembering me that way, you keep doing action. Means what? Means remembering me that I'm watching every action of yours, every thought of yours. Okay. So tasmat sarveshu kaleshu. So all the time, 24/7, because he's watching us 24/7. Right? Technically, we say, technical language, pure consciousness never rises, never sets. The ego rises and sets, but pure consciousness never. Then, mai arpita manaha, mai arpita buddhi. So, mai arpita mano buddhi, that mai arpita goes with manaha, and mai arpita goes with buddhi. So, it's what do you do? Is mind like a gulab jam that you'll put it in a katori? No, that is. So what is arpit means? Give it to me. Na? Mind, you give it to me. You put your mind in me. You put your intellect in me. And you go on acting in this world. So what does that mean? Bhagwan, I think of you, then how I'll do the action properly. So basically, mai arpita buddhi means every action to be done joyfully. See, we can do action and we can go on complaining till the cows come home, right? People do that. Are, I have to get up early. Now these people are coming. Now I have to make tea for them. Now I have to cook for them. I can do that. I'll do anyway. Or I can do it happily. So when he says, mai arpita buddhi, see, he is the abode of happiness. There can be no grumpiness, no sadness in him. So when the mind is surrendered to him, arpit is also surrendered, na? When the mind is surrendered to the source of happiness, then whatever that mind does or thinks must be out of happiness. Even if we give, na, we should never ignore these people are asking, now I have to give charity. It should, otherwise don't do it. It is better not to do. It is better not to do if you're going to grudge it and do it. If you want to do it, then make sure that you can do it happily. And then you do it. Now that's fine. So this is what is mean by mai arpita manaha. Now mai arpita buddhi means what? With intellect also with me. Means the intellect has to follow the what is my duty. Whatever is my duty has to be done. And that duty has to be done joyfully. So if there is a little baby that I have and he wakes up in the middle of the night and I now have to feel, no. It's my duty and do it joyfully. So that is what is meant. Now, then we come to the question, who determines duty? Scriptures determine duty. How do they determine duty? By the stage and ashram of life that we are in. Okay. So we need to ourselves judge ourselves because each one of us is in a different stage of life. So whatever stage of life that we are in, I must recognize what my duty is for that stage and I must do it. So that is mai arpita buddhi. And then the doing has to be joyfully, done joyfully. So that this is a very important verse in this chapter, please remember, because all of it, you know, so tasma, therefore, he says all the time, it's a full-time job, spirituality, bring, you know, that's why our, at least I know my parents and Swamiji's, when they sit in my car, anytime I'm driving, even they'll say, Hey Ram, Hare Krishna, something like that, they will say. That is what, you know, remembrance of the Lord. And that is the purpose behind me saying Sahana Bhavatu before lecture and all that. So all that is in our Hindu culture tradition, we say, get up in the morning, take a bath, first light a lamp. You know, so we have remembered the Lord. So our days then at before going to bed, take the name of the Lord. Means we have remembered the Lord. Now what we should do is now after we have studied this chapter, when we remember the Lord, we must also remember Aksharam Paramam Brahma. Not just, oh, my Krishna, my Ishta Devata, not like that. We must recognize him as the substratum within me and the substratum of the entire world. So just that thought also we must keep bringing now for practice. So that at the end, when that thought comes in, immediately that thought also will come that, oh, he's the substratum, he's the formless substratum. And maybe we have a chance of reaching him too. You know? So Anusmara, understand me first and then you remember me. And then you go and you fight. For Arjun, it is you fight. But for us, it is do your work and do it for others, which means make it as karma yoga and do it joyfully and do whatever is your duty. Don't get into things which are not your duty. Then you shall doubtless come to me alone. Then do not have any doubt. Bhagwan has said it. If you're sincerely doing it, you will reach the goal. Because this is a promise by Bhagwan. Okay, now further, we'll read this verse and then we'll see more about it next week. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasananya gamina paramam purusham divyam yati parthanu chintayan. With the mind not moving towards any other thing, made steadfast by the method of habitual meditation and constantly meditating on the Supreme Purusha, the resplendent, O Partha, he goes to him. So this is a conclusion. Abhyasa, practice. Practice has to be Dirgha Kala and Nairantarya. So Dirgha Kala means for what is practice? When we learned driving, what did we do? We went on driving every day, right? We went for a drive every single day, half an hour, drive the car, you know, where there is no traffic and all. And then that is what is practice. So you do it over and over again. And depending, some people might get it right away. Cooking, we did it over and over. Typing, when I was learning typing, every single day I would come home and, you know, when first I was transferred and there was a computer and there was a keyboard and I thought, oh my God, now I need to know typing. So at home in the typewriter, every day one story I would type from my children's, it was big print, you know, so I would sit and, so that is practice. So it's a repetition. Practice is, abhyasa is repetition. And you have to do it for a long time because this is the most difficult to think of the Lord is the most difficult, to meditate on the Lord as per what the scriptures have told us is most difficult because the mind is very scattered right now, right? It is very anekagra. Anekagra means it is running in different directions. To bring it and to make it single pointed is extremely difficult. And it will become easy only if the mind is highly purified. So abhyasa yoga, yoga coming from yuj dhatu to join. So practice so that you can join with me, with yukta, yoga yuktena. So practice the joining with me. And how do I practice joining with him is remembering him. Meditating on, that's why he says, with the mind not, and then chetasa here is mind, chetas is mind. Na anya gamina, don't let the mind, gamina is to go. Don't, right now, our mind, like I said, is anekagra. It is going, not going, our mind is running literally it runs. You try to hold it at one place, it has gone to 100 other places in that 1 second or 1 minute. Okay, so don't let it run anywhere else. Practice keeping it in me. Means practice thinking about me all the time. Vedantic thing, thinking of him all the time, is keeping your mind on what your hands are doing. Okay, please understand. Because if I keep thinking of the Lord all the time, then how am I going to do my work? Don't ask like that. When you're doing your work, be single-pointed. So practice being single-pointed in your external work, and that will help you to become single-pointed. Me also, I shouldn't say you. It'll help me to become single-pointed on the Lord when it comes. Because anything which is a mental activity is definitely more difficult than what is a gross activity. What can be done physically is much easier than what you are asked to do mentally. And here, meditation is a mental practice. It is not a physical doing anything. Actually, physical, all activity has to stop. That's why we say you should sit and meditate. So all these other activities must not happen. And then this abhyasa yoga, you practice abhyasa so that it becomes yoga, so that it becomes a means for you to join. Join to whom? Paramam Purusham Divyam. That is what he says, you meditate. Now here this Purusham does not mean Hiranyagarbha. That's why he's qualified it with two other words, Paramam and Divyam. These two words tell us that this Purusham in the middle, it does not mean Hiranyagarbha anymore. It means the Supreme Self, the pure consciousness, which is supreme, paramam. So supreme, that which is the support of everything and itself doesn't require any support. Okay, by itself to exist, electricity, most common example, can stay without the computer, without the heater, without the light. Electricity is happily staying there. But the computer and all these things have to be dependent on electricity for their running. So that is what is meant by supreme. And divyam, divine. Okay. Yati partha anu chintayan. Again, partha anu word has come again. Chintayan is to think, not chinta, not worry. Anu, so afterwards, you think, afterwards means what? After knowing me correctly. Again, anu has come. Anusmara has come, anu chintayan also. Okay, so after you come to know what exactly I am, I'm not this form or what you see here, that is not what I am. I am that final substratum, paramam divyam. I am that aksharam, paramam divyam purusham. Then once you have come to know that, then you keep your mind in that all the time and don't allow it to go. Anya is other places, gamina to go. So don't let it go anywhere else. Practice keeping. And if you do that, then you will come to me. Because you're thinking of me all the time. And the principle is whatever you think of, you will reach. So that is the principle. Okay, so we shall stop here. Because now next verse, what he does is, he gives pointers as to what we should be meditating on. That's why the next verse is complete a description of the Supreme Self. How we should think of him. That is what is, so that will be the next. Any questions? No questions? Okay. So we shall meet next Monday, which would be 8th, I believe. Next Monday, and then the following Monday, that will be the two classes before we close for Christmas. And then let me know if we can open on the 8th of January. Okay. Or what date we are opening in January, let me know. Okay, so we shall close now. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Avashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. Okay, good night, everybody.